A change of season means longer days, better outdoor activities, and more ways to get healthier, including checking in on your health and wellness. With Everly Well, you can take action today by taking one of their at-home lab tests or by adding their vitamins and supplements into your daily routine.
Everly Well is digital healthcare designed for you, all at an affordable and transparent price. With over 30 at-home lab tests, you'll be able to choose the test that makes the most sense for you to get the answers you need, like the women's health test or food sensitivity test. I used the food sensitivity test on myself and my daughter because she was reacting to things, but I couldn't figure out what. And Everly Well sent us the test, and now we have our answers.
And so here's how it works. Everly Well ships products straight to you with everything needed in one package. To take your at-home lab test, simply collect your sample and use the included prepaid shipping label to mail your test back to a certified lab. Your physician-reviewed results get sent to your phone or device in just days. Balanced hormones are just one of the things that keep us healthy and feeling our best, especially when you're under the weather, like me. But so I actually did take the women's hormone panel test, and I shared it with my doctor, who helped me balance those suckers.
Nice. And for listeners of the show, Everly Well is offering a special discount of 20% off an at-home lab test at everlywell.com/OC.
That's everlywell.com/OC for 20% off your next at-home lab test.
everlywell.com/OC.
Welcome to the OC Bitches. We are on season 3, episode 5, The Perfect Storm.
Mm-hmm.
I think that movie came out about the same time, right? Or just before this, probably.
You know, that movie really pissed me off.
Oh.
Because you go through the whole damn movie and you get to the end and they're all fucking dead. So you don't know if any of that even happened.
Like, how did they know?
How
did
they
recreate?
How can you tell the story if no one was alive to tell the story? So you're watching this whole thing. I'm like, oh, well, this, you know, thinking that this all happened, and then they all die. And you're like, I just spent 2 hours. I felt gypped.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, it's significant artistic
mad.
License. Well, especially because I'm in Massachusetts. There are a lot of people with a lot of strong opinions about that as well.
Well, oh,
really?
Oh, and then this episode is then the perfect, this is your last episode. But you know what? We should probably let our audience know
who we're talking to. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Some
that
dude.
That caffeine's got you
dude.
Going.
Oh, yeah.
So today's guest is Eric Mabius. And I just had to add your full name because I love it. Eric Harry Timothy Mabius is an actor and father of two. And after getting his degree in cinema studies from Sarah Lawrence, he made his film debut in Welcome to the Dollhouse. Other films include I Shot Andy Warhol, Cruel Intentions, The Crow, Salvation, and Resident Evil. In television, he appeared on the L Word, Ugly Betty, woo, and Signed, Sealed, Delivered. And this is just to name a few. You all know him as that likable and that favorite Dean of Discipline, Jack Hess. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry I can't be there in person. I'm hiding out here in the woods of Western Massachusetts.
Well, yes, it looks very lovely, your kitchen.
Thank you.
I know.
Thank you.
I have to say.
Okay, before we get started, there's something I needed to ask about because I saw this on your Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah.
I need to know about your luge talent because it says that you were an honorary captain of the 2010
what?
Olympics, and I have an interesting connection to luge.
Well, when I moved to Amherst for high school, I became fast friends with a guy who was on the senior national team, on the Olympic team. He was my classmate, and he was in the Calgary Games, and I went to watch him compete up in Lake Placid. And I just thought it was the craziest thing next to NASCAR. It was like NASCAR on ice. And I thought, I have to be, you know, a part of this. So I signed up for some summer recruitment camps and I made the traveling team. And I'd leave high school in October and come back in March. And I'd be gone traveling around the world and competing and training.
Wow.
That's exciting. It's exciting.
I'm always so amazed when I see that. And it looks terrifying, but also fun. It's kind of
insane.
Well,
also that. That time of your life. I mean, I wouldn't do it now, but when you're a teenager, you know.
Because my father-in-law, Adam's father, was a part of the 1964 very first luge Olympic team.
What?
His
name was George Farmer, or his name is George Farmer. And then he's also—
I remember that name.
Yeah, at the Olympics, he hurt himself in the trials, I guess, at the Olympics. But he also is part of, you know, there's the top 10 most controversial situations that happened at the Olympics. He and the team got into a big fight in Vienna.
Oh.
And he's like number 8 on one of those. But anyway, I thought that was an interesting, interesting connection because—
Yeah, because that was, I mean, that was the Innsbruck Games, correct? That he was in?
64 in Vienna.
Yeah, so he would have been in Austria, right? Innsbruck. Right. And I think that was the year, it wasn't the U.S. team, but I think someone lost their—
Ooh.
There was a cable hanging down and sat up at the outrun at the end. I don't know if it was during the Olympics or during a training run, but yeah, it was the most horrific story I'd ever heard.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh, maybe that one's not on the list.
No, maybe.
My mouth is on
that's
the floor.
So random.
Oh, God.
Anyway, how did you get the acting bug?
When that happened.
I think growing up in the back seats at drive-ins, you know, when my parents would take us to the 8 and 10 shows and we were supposed to fall asleep for the 10 o'clock show and we wouldn't, and we watched from the back seat. I think the mystery of drive-in theaters and my mom taking me to theater when I was a little kid, and my dad sort of being obsessed with movies. It was the 70s. I was born in 71. So that was sort of that era with the U.S. filmmakers were trying to rip off a lot of the European filmmakers and making great, great product, obviously. And Scorsese was kind of coming into his own, but that really started it. And I started interning at a theater my freshman year of college. And I really watching like John Patrick Shanley workshop new plays and sneaking in, watching like Totoro and Dreyfus rehearse. I just had it under my skin.
Do you feel like that sounds similar to me? Because my father was an actor, but he was a film buff as well. And I remember watching, my dad didn't care if I watched R-rated movies or very adult movies. I'm thinking Prince of the City, Treat Williams. Or
my dad sat me down. My dad also is into movies. And I remember being like 7 years old and he sat me down to watch How the West Was Won. And I was like, Dad.
So
or
seven.
Or this or Serpico or a lot of the
Lawrence of Arabia.
Or movies that you just were like, you knew they were important, but I had no idea what was going on in sixth grade.
Yeah, no.
Like being scarred by Godfather when you were like 7 years old.
Oh, yeah. I always thought there was going to be a head of a horse in my bed at some point.
Yeah.
But I think it's when you see your dad as a dad, but then you see your parents' passion, you know, and it's like, well, if it's important to my parents, it must be important. It's interesting how those things are passed on. So food is really important. CG's finally getting it.
Food and film.
Very good.
Yeah. So really, we sort of absorb that. And yeah, they sort of imbue it with that meaning. I think it was really important. Like going to see, remember we had a class trip in seventh grade to see The King and I. Yul Brynner had brought the show back when he had cancer and he knew he was going to pass away, and he came back and he did like a short run and I saw him do that.
Wow. Sorry.
Did That's you do so musical cool. theater ever?
I didn't, no. No, I only sing in the shower. Here and there I have to for a role, but no, I don't really like my voice so much.
I love Welcome to the Dollhouse. I used to watch that movie all the time. That's so cool. It was your first film? Is that right?
It was, yeah. Yeah, that was, again, one of those I had to sing in, and then they ended up dubbing that. But it was really great. It was a lot of fun. Todd is just such a brilliant filmmaker.
I noticed that a number of your early films revolved around high school. Didn't they? When you think of Dollhouse and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Cruel Intentions.
Yeah, it's funny because watching this this episode of The OC, I thought, wow, I haven't played such an overt bad guy, like evil bad guy in so long, because early on it was a lot of super edgy indie movies and Dollhouse was in its own way, definitely ahead of its time. But yeah, a lot of like troubled youth, teens, roles like that.
So you'd already done that by the time you came to the OC. Did they offer it to you or did you have to audition?
I don't believe I auditioned for it. I was just off a series for... John McNamara created a series called Eyes that was really fun, and that had just gotten canceled.
So they clearly, when the Josh and Stephanie are, when they're like, oh, this guy knows this character. And I mean, he really is
such a dick.
It's an interesting, like, you know, obviously in this episode or in the next episode, we start getting some where they purposely make some characters vulnerable and likable. And they never did that with your character.
No,
you were just that flat out. I mean, were you playing a lot of villains? Do you embrace the villain or do you try not to be typecast now?
Well, no, I definitely, yeah. Well, the funny thing is, as you know, everyone remembers you only for your last role, generally, whatever it is. And I was in that kind of indie movie mode for quite a while. And whenever you're doing film, they're like, well, why don't you do TV? And then you do TV and everyone's like, well, why haven't you done film? So it doesn't really, it's strange because now I've been, maybe it's because I have kids, but I, you know, was never a candidate to do like a Hallmark movie. And then this amazing writer, Martha Williamson, created this show that I fell in love with. And I've been doing that for a number of years now. And I play the sweetest guy in the world, like very buttoned up, very verbose, very sort of anachronistic and put together in three-piece suit. And he runs the dead letter office in the Denver post office. They try and deliver, you know, parcels and packages that can't be delivered. So it's, generally I'm not gravitating towards playing a villain. That going back to watch the episode yesterday, I thought it was good that I wasn't judging the guy because he is such a jerk. I would have punched the guy as well.
It's
really bad.
Do you remember?
And I don't know why there was nothing redeeming about that. Sorry.
Yeah, no, please. But we're just wanting, we always like want to know if you have any memories like from being there and being on set and, you know, anything from your time on the OC.
It was funny. I was trying to remember, I had to go back and look at the date that this aired because, and I was trying to figure out why I don't have a lot of memories because I was in a few episodes. And it was right around when I proposed to my wife at the time. And the show had just, quite literally just gotten canceled, the one I was on for, called Eyes for ABC. So I think all that was sort of coming together. And I don't have a lot of memories except it being a fun set to be on and certain people wishing that they weren't stuck on a hit TV show and wanting to do film at the time.
Ah.
That made an impression upon me. I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
You're like, if I could just...
You're very fortunate. You
know? Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't me, right?
No.
Well,
no.
Yeah, no, we... No.
I wouldn't bring it up. I'm more tactful.
We've discussed this because, I mean, we try to explore why this show was such a cultural phenomenon and so many things. I mean, for instance, you went on to Ugly Betty, which I kind of... And you were on Sexiest Man Alive list with people. And there's a certain amount of fame that comes with it. And I feel like Ugly Betty had a similar fan base for a while. Do you have thoughts on getting that kind of attention or being on a show like that? Because we explore that, the effects of that fame on this show a little bit.
I think we all have a little bit of that wanting to slow everything down and appreciate what's happening because everything comes at you so quickly. No matter how much experience you have, nothing can prepare you for that specific sort of barrage. And the fact that there's a lot of bouncing around with our show. We shot the pilot in New York, then the first two seasons in LA, and then they moved us to New York. So, and during that time we had both my sons. So I felt like I really wanted to enjoy that experience because I was surrounded by such talent and it was such a fun job to go to every day, but I was being pulled, you know, my kids are at home. I'm missing out on things I can't ever get back. So yeah, it was hard. As you know, we were almost 10 months out of the year. We were almost always shooting two episodes simultaneously. And the downtime you had, they were usually traveling you for press. So there was never, there was never any other time. So yeah, I wish I could slow time down. And I tried to appreciate it then, appreciate being a new dad, and appreciate, you know, that being a part of that show, but it, you know, never irons out the way you hope.
We discuss a lot of that, how it's hard to have to be a parent and fly across the country and miss out, and it what it does to the psyche. It's definitely had a worked my brain quite a bit from time to time. Yeah,
it definitely.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing it as a mother. No way.
No. It guides my decisions for sure. I didn't work for the first 3 years of my daughter's life, and then when I went back, it was, oh my goodness, it was so rough. Oh gosh. Yeah.
So yeah, just get them to college, and then you can go back.
I got a ways to
go. It's like, wait a second, now you're too old.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Article combines the curation of a boutique furniture store with the comfort and simplicity of shopping online. And Article has just launched their new outdoor products for the summer, with 42 new pieces plus a selection of bestsellers from seasons past. And you know what I like to do? I like to check out their last chance sale items. There are so many stylish options at huge savings. It's enough for your entire patio, bedroom, or even your whole home.
Article's team of designers focuses on beautifully crafted pieces, quality materials, and durable construction. They are dedicated to a modern aesthetic of mid-century Scandinavian, industrial, and bohemian designs. I can't tell you how many pieces of Article furniture I have in my house. I love it so much. It's so accessible. It comes fast and it's affordable. And also, your room or your house looks really cute.
Article not only makes it easy to shop online, but they have incredibly fair prices too. You can save up to 30% off traditional retail prices. Article is able to keep their prices low by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. No showrooms, no salespeople, no retail markups. Sign me up.
Article is offering our listeners $50 off their first purchase of $100 or more. To claim, visit article.com/OC and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout.
That's article.com/OC to get $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
Well, we wanted to get into
the
perfect storm.
Yeah.
Still mad over here. Still mad. I want answers. But the synopsis for the episode is Ryan finds out about Dean Hess's crusade to ruin his reputation. Feeling discouraged, he drops his tutor and lands a job as a fisherman with Johnny's help. Meanwhile, Summer
is that funny?
Because I was watching this, okay, yesterday, and I text Josh, and I'm like, I text Josh Schwartz, and I was like, so Ryan's about to become a fisherman. He's like, season 3.
Rachel doesn't remember. She's watching for the first time.
I'm watching for the first time. He's like, I'm like, a fisherman? Like, what is happening? Okay, sorry. Meanwhile,
was he displeased with his tangent in the
season 3 is always a rough one for Schwartz.
But I'm actually, you know, I know he said that, so I was I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I like it.
I just know what's coming, so I'm dreading it.
Okay. So
I do know what's coming. Okay. Summer and Seth are determined to catch Taylor Townsend and Dean Hess in the act. They loop in Sandy, who uses his legal skills to get rid of Dean Hess and get Ryan back at Harbor. Also, Charlotte finds a new Mark in Julie Cooper. She preys on Julie's vulnerabilities and offers to buy her a condo and hopes to enlist her in a bigger scam. Directed by Tony Warmby, written by Mike Kelly. Original air date November 3rd, 2005.
Woo.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. So starting with this episode, we see, I just wanted to comment that Kirsten is now trying to cook for her family.
Is this like the eggs Benedict?
The egg.
I said eggs. I've never said eggs in my life. Eggs. I don't know what just happened right there.
Eggs Benedict Gruyere avec pâté de fruit.
And it what was wrong with the way you
eggs,
said eggs?
Eggs?
I'm sorry.
Eggs? Do you like, hear how I'm saying it? Eggs? I say eggs.
Eggs is kind of West Coast.
No, I'm from LA. I think because I was back east.
That.
I just came from my family back east. Maybe that's why I said eggs. They had ogies and eggs.
Oh,
eggs.
My God.
Anyways.
Are they from Philly?
Yes. My mom's from Philly.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. And they have water.
Water. Yes, they do.
Yep.
Hold on now.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Anyway.
Are you going to put out the wash?
So it's morning, of course, and we start our Cohen kitchen morning, and Kirsten is serving food that looks, I just have to give it to the props for when they see it in the script that it says Eggs Benedict Gruyere avec pâté de fruits, whatever.
Was it not like a jello mold of
fruit? It was like jello, yeah. And then she hands it, and they, of course, they want cereal and bagel, and they're just so grossed out. But there's a funny scene, there's a funny look where Adam's playing with it, and Ben is just cracking up. But the prop department did a great job on that food. Anyway.
It did look beautiful.
It did, and there's no chance she actually cooked that. Kirsten.
Right, right. No, the prop department did. Yes. But anyway, Sandy gets a phone call from Dr. Kim and says that, of course, Ryan can go to this fair, this college fair, but that he's found out that Dean has attached a letter to the transcript, I guess highlighting his psychotic behavior. No, is that the word they use?
I don't know, but it's. Do you like find it? It's just, Dean Hess is so evil.
Well, and you don't play a villain as a villain. He's motivated, right? You know, but you didn't judge him.
Absolutely. I don't know why it was so. I mean, I did what I was allowed to do in as much, you know, as I was allowed to do.
And you did actually make out with Autumn Reeser, right?
Yeah.
When I catch you guys.
Yeah. And he did punch you at the carnival, if you remember that.
Yeah.
Do you remember shooting that?
I do remember that because there was, you know, it was a big sort of fair scene and lots of emotion running high. Yes.
Well, in the meantime, he goes off to have lunch, I guess, with Marissa at her school.
Who does?
Ben.
Ryan?
Ryan. He goes to the new school. I didn't know that you can do that.
No.
You can actually go to a public school.
Oh, let me tell you about public school, okay? So one of my best friends went to Pali, which is Pacific Palisades High School.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, I didn't have school one day. I was in a different school in the Valley. And she's like, just come to school with me. Literally, I went to high school with her for the day. Sat in all the classes. The teachers were like, hey, like, no thing. You know, it was just, I don't know.
Interesting.
I went to school. I went to Pali for a day.
That's cool.
So, yes.
That's good to know.
Public schools are a little more lenient.
Did you notice that Chili was wearing a t-shirt that said Big Japan on it? Adam's band?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
That was Adam Brody's band. And Johnny Lewis, who played Chili, was one of Adam's really good friends. And that was his band at the time.
Yeah.
It used to be Big in Japan. And then they dropped the N and it just became Big Japan. Japan.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, in the meantime, so Ryan is bonding with Johnny, Chili, and Casey, and that's a nice little thing there. But you know what? At the actual fair, Ryan...
The college fair.
Yeah, the college fair that some are called the circus. So this is where he is talking to Berkeley, and they suggest architecture, which was kind of a nice moment. If this is the first time they mention architecture for the character of Ryan... Because, of course, we know that's kind of the route that he's going on.
Also, Princeton was called New Jersey University or something? College of New Jersey? I never knew that. I'm assuming that's an actual fact. Seth says it in the hallway. He's like, Princeton was...
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Seth says it? Anyway.
Okay.
I'm assuming
that's
facts.
But Dean
and
has...
I have a friend who grew up in Princeton.
Really?
So yeah. I've never heard that.
I've driven through there. It's beautiful.
It is, yeah.
So Ryan is there with Sandy and Kirsten. And Dean Hess walks in and just clocks him and he's beelining. And here we come, Hero Sandy, who gets right in front of him and says, come on, of course he needs to be punished for his behavior, but you're going to ruin his only shot, right? Or Dean wants to kick him out. And of course, Sandy's like, not unless you have a court-ordered injunction.
Right, because it's a public event and he's allowed to be there.
Right. But I think...
Can a dean override a principal?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
Because then it would go to the board, I would imagine.
Right. Because he got clearance from principal.
I mean, we didn't have... Our high school didn't have a dean of discipline.
I don't know if I've ever heard of that.
A dean? I feel like maybe we had a dean. Did Notre Dame have a dean?
Well, there's deans, but are
Not
there...
A dean
but
of
a dean of discipline.
No,
detention.
No. I mean, like in high school. Yeah, it's like, I guess for a very wealthy private school,
right.
They would have...
There's
like
anything
a
boarding
school,
do.
I feel like.
Possibly.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, but the whole point of this is that they have this confrontation and Sandy is trying to do something to appeal to the dean. And he's like, F no. He's no. I'm not doing this. And Ryan overhears it. He says no college is going to touch him. And instead of just, he doesn't storm off, but he basically just goes, he gives up and walks away.
And then the next thing we see is Seth like showing up with coffee. And his first thing is like, oh man, I thought you went Greyhound.
Right.
That was
like
cute.
He left on the Greyhound bus.
Because he's always leaving.
He's always leaving.
But he's, nope, I'm giving up.
Nope, he doesn't leave. What does he do?
Quits high school.
Quits his tutor, which is his high school,
right.
Because he got kicked out, thanks to Dean Hess. And
he's such a jerk. Dean Hess.
I mean, what's going on with Ryan? Because is not going to college such a big deal? I guess for the purpose of this,
I didn't go. Well, I went for a semester, but I didn't do college.
But I guess for the purpose of a television show, we have to show these stakes being high. And in everyone's world, Ryan, why would you do this? Why would you quit high school? I think quitting high school is a serious mistake.
Yeah, you don't
want to
quit high school.
Right.
Right.
But
it's also Sandy and their involvement in trying to help, you know, steer him in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
Setting him up for success. I think it's part of that.
Well, yeah, and I like how Sandy refers to him as my son.
Yeah.
Well,
he does. I mean, I know he does that, but it just this moment, I was like, that's really sweet. But okay, so he's quits his tutor.
and yeah, but everybody's like, what? And then Marissa's like, what? And she tells Johnny.
Yep. And so, what does Johnny do?
Johnny goes to meet him and at the diner because he's got the best burgers. He didn't know about the diner. Anyway.
Yeah, I know.
But he doesn't, he says, you know, no offense, but you don't know me. And he's like, no, I don't, you know. It's not like he's trying to talk him into it, but he mentions, Ryan mentions that he needs a job. And he's like, well, my uncle's got a commercial fishing business.
I mean.
This is where you had to text Josh.
Introduce our new fisherman, Ryan Atwood. I was like, a fisherman? And let me tell you, okay, I know later on, and we'll get there, when we see him getting on the boat, the only thing I could think of was Deadliest Catch. Did you not see Ryan about to, like, embark on basically that reality show of Deadliest Catch?
I think it had more impact today because we now all know that show.
Like what it's actually going to be like.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about actually, but
yeah, they're
we
not
had
in
a
Alaska,
little glimpse of what it's like to be a fisherman living on a boat in the middle of the ocean. Does not look glamorous.
But he's up for the job and he gets...
Of course he is.
and he shows up late for this dinner. And of course, Seth is speculating that he's off with a cult drinking the Kool-Aid. And he shows up and he says, I'm not, you know, Seth and Kirsten have rehired the tutor, but instead he asks for them to sign this release form. And he's like, what are you talking about? And of course, Sandy ends up signing it. And there's this moment where Kirsten goes, Sandy. Seth goes, Dad. And because Ben did some super intense acting. Let me see if I can recreate it.
Oh boy, here we go.
he was like, I need to make my own decisions. And that's when Sandy goes, okay, I'll sign it.
Well done.
Scene.
Well done, Mindy.
I don't know. I thought it was better in my head when I thought about that.
My favorite is Marissa at this dinner because she just calls him out.
Oh, that's the next dinner.
Oh, that's not this dinner?
No.
Okay.
But you're right. No, but that it goes to that next thing. I mean, is that they have this farewell dinner.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. And she's not having it.
No, I love it. She's calling him out.
So you're for team Marissa here, where she's like...
What the... He's not even... What is he? 18, 17? 17. He's like, I'm quitting. I'm going to go be a fisherman, a deep sea fisherman. Like, you're not... Whatever. He's just... It's a little far-fetched.
Wait, but okay. But that being said, how funny was the scene, though, with Peter... saying, with Kirsten saying, I didn't use shrimp, I used tofu. And he says, I like the tofuna, the tofurkey, the cream toe cheese. And he says, too much. And then you say, oh, tell me about the captain. And she says, oh. What the hell?
I don't know.
We're kind of giggling here, Eric. I just think that's one of the funniest things. And nobody laughs.
About my parents?
Yeah.
Polly want a cracker? But I mean, I feel like Summer even makes fun of herself. Like, okay.
I just thought it was very cute. Because everyone should have been laughing about
to
that.
To Schwartz about my parrot outburst.
Yeah, there was a joke about pirates and peg legs or something.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. A lot of,
I just enjoyed the
sea jokes.
There's so much humor.
We all were getting
from
our
Summer
sea legs.
This episode. And I just love it. And for some reason, it's like, it was, she does it to complete dead air because it's just so intense, I guess.
Oh my goodness. But Marissa, season three.
Marissa gets up and takes off and reminded me of CG. You know what? I'm just ruining everyone's dinner. I'm going to go. She didn't actually say
she
that.
Right,
I say
CG
is my daughter because she reminds me of that.
Yeah. She has every right to be pissed.
She has every right.
I mean, they're literally boyfriend and girlfriend, and he doesn't even tell her, oh, by the way, I'm out of here.
Right. She had to hear it from Stanley Kirsten. But then he actually says, well, Johnny's the one who got me the job. And that's when Marissa's oh.
And then she goes and confronts Johnny.
Yeah. And he's like, he's so like deer in the headlights. She's like, what? I thought I was helping. And she goes, oh, right. I guess
now,
I should be mad at you.
There's like an underlying thing where he's trying to get rid of Ryan because he's in love with Marissa.
You know,
he plays it so innocently.
I don't know. I honestly think that when Ryan says, what I need is a job, I think Johnny relates to that because of where they came from.
Okay.
He's like, I'm not going to college. Okay, let me see if I can help you this way. I think he genuinely did that at the moment. But then when she says, I don't know where he is, and he says, well, I do. And she shows up at the dock. She looks so out of place in this Deadliest Catch scenario in that cute little dress, right?
I really like that he tries to get him the job because almost like a Rorschach test, like if he's going to hang with that job or it's going to scare him straight right back into school because it is such a hard...
You know, it is. That's a great point, Eric, because it is only 3 weeks.
He can't get off the boat. Oh, it's only 3 weeks? I'm thinking 5 months. Did they say 3 weeks?
The captain suggested.
He said it depends how good the fishing is, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot going on, but...
All right, well, 3 weeks is not as big of a deal.
Right. But there is... So Marissa shows up and she does say, I didn't get to say what I really feel. And mm-hmm. You kind of think that she's going to say something nice. And it's very valid because at first I was like, she seems really pissed off, but for 3 weeks. But she says, it reminds me of what my dad did. He's left me on a boat and it's never worked out. And you're a coward. And because she's finally figured out that her dad's such a coward. So that's super valid.
I really
relate to that.
I did. And I thought she did a very good job in that scene.
Right, right.
I'd be pissed.
Right.
I mean, the hard part is prolonging that point to where they do in the story.
Right.
You know, that doesn't happen the first time that she gets mad at him for not telling him.
Right.
Before we finish what happens after, let's jump to your storyline because I wanted to call this the sidekick episode. Clearly.
Oh, the actual sidekick device.
Yeah. Because when you guys are show up at school,
bedazzled,
that morning,
mind you.
You look like you had fun with that.
Oh, yeah. I was laughing because there's that one scene when when Taylor comes to the hotel and I try to close it. Like, yeah. I remember filming that when I'm like, yeah, 10-4, good buddy. Like that whole thing between Seth and Summer, and I try to slam the sidekick shut, and it doesn't happen.
I'm pretty so convinced funny. That we had sponsorship.
We did because we all were gifted sidekicks.
I don't remember getting one.
You didn't get one?
Oh no!
No, just the core four.
I mean, I'm just kidding.
The ones that needed.
They did. I feel like we all had sidekicks. That was really fun because you had that satisfaction of a flip phone, like snapping it shut on someone. But on sidekick, you were just like. And you got to like,
well,
with that sound effect.
And it's funny
exactly
when
that.
Sandy actually is playing with it in the end scene, he goes, he kind of fumbles it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he was acting or if it was real because it seemed pretty real. But I looked up the history of sidekick because it's, you know, and it literally was the first one to kind of, they call it kind of the first smartphone, really.
Yeah.
And
it was fun to type on it because you had both of your
thumbs. It was horizontal.
Yeah, it was horizontal. You could just be like, do.
Well, when Sandy comes to confront Dean Hess, he gives a full rundown of his sidekick's capabilities.
That was a commercial, right?
Did you not find it odd, and I know we are all over the place, but did you not find it odd that you never actually see the pictures he's claiming to have? I know he's bluffing, but I mean, I'm watching it, and I'm like, I would ask to see the pictures.
We have to, you have to suspend a huge amount of disbelief.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
especially because Dean is such a needler, I'm sure he would have been like, what are you talking about? Show me.
Yeah, he would have.
Yeah.
But you automatically blame Taylor, which is...
Yeah, he seemed to have enough. But the problem is, I think he had enough information that was true that they both fall for. Even, and this is before social media, even saying something can really, you know, make somebody guilty without proof.
No, he had enough information because Summer literally did see you guys kissing.
Yeah,
so,
it's true.
You know, so it was something that happened. And
but when we first see them, see Taylor and she's texting, I thought this was so funny. It says she's texting Dartman for you. That's on the.
You could actually see what she was writing.
And she says, "You're so naughty." NAWTY. They show the audience what's going on.
Yeah.
What she's texting, but I'm like, "Dart men for you." And
literally, like, dart men.
Dart man. F the number four. You. Yeah. I don't know. I guess that's Dean Hess. But anyway, so but Seth isn't convinced that anything.
Oh, because he's a Dartmouth man.
Dartmouth.
Ah.
Probably.
Dartman. That's what I thought. I was like, is it dart? Okay. Is it a college?
You're really good at darts.
Yeah. So that lets the audience know she is texting Dean, I guess. But, you know, Seth isn't convinced. And
why doesn't he believe me, little shit?
Well, I guess it was like, it's almost like, it's too good to be true or something, or I don't know. For some reason they decided that he doesn't. Anyway, but Summer is stalking Taylor at school, and Taylor catches her, which is a very funny scene because instantly you get caught. So you tell this big lie and say,
Miss Applebaum.
Oh my gosh, she's going to get Bonita in trouble Applebaum. For kissing from Mrs. Applebaum. And you.
Anyone get the reference? No? No? Okay.
I did, yes.
Thank you.
Tribe Called Quest, I listened this morning, actually.
Oh, were you listening to this morning? Tribe's the best.
My 13-year-old likes, my 13-year-old loves him.
Well, that is a wise choice in music. so she tells Taylor that she saw Dean Hess and Miss Applebaum getting it on.
And you almost crack up at the back.
At the end. Did I write that? I was watching it and I see myself like breaking and they kept that take for whatever reason.
Well, did you leave and go, I was going this way?
Yeah.
And that I have a feeling you exited.
I think I probably exited the wrong way and I was like, oh shit. And I came back and was like, I meant to go this way.
Yeah.
Oh man. There were a couple improvs I noticed that they kept in of mine in, I think it was this episode.
Yeah.
That was definitely one of them.
Well, and then at the fair, you guys see them fighting, and Seth still isn't buying like that it's a lover's quarrel. He's like, no, it's not. And so then Summer decides she's going to write because now she has kind of put this whole thing into play, but she's like, wait, I need them to get back together so I can use it to get Ryan back in because that plan wasn't in place before she said something about Mrs. Applebaum.
Right.
So it was hard for me to follow the storyline. I was trying to figure it out. So I'm just saying it out loud so I'm clear on this. Because so now she wants to write a letter to Taylor, an apology letter. And he still isn't buying it. And he's, because, oh, that's when Seth goes, we have bigger problems. We need to get them. We want to get him back into school. He's going to be a fisherman. But so that's when.
We have bigger problems. Ryan's going to be a fisherman.
Right? He's like, out of all the things that you've planned, this is, out of all of shenanigans that we've ever done, this is the number one worst, or I don't know. It's at the top of the list. But then that's when he decides, this is a very cute scene. He shows up with the burner sidekick, the bedazzled
the
one.
The burner phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're quoting, you're trying to steal from the valley.
Yeah. Why not? It's already written.
It's already written. But he says, no, we're going to send an invitation, not an apology letter. We're going to text an invitation to the Mermaid Inn. And then I love how they give this exposition and remind the audience of everything that went down in the Mermaid Inn. That's where Teresa may have conceived Ryan's baby, may or may not.
You slept with Luke.
Yeah. And
what else?
Orange County's very own Den of Sin.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. It's very cute.
Yes. There Something's fishy. Going on there.
And then, of course, there's the Taylor showing up for the... So in this scene...
Yes.
I had to watch it a couple times because Adam is making the funniest choices.
I know. He really is.
Because everything that
He's
you're...
like, what?
He,
like, what?
He goes, everything you say, he interjects, heinous, what up?
Yeah.
There's just
that
a lot of...
That was all Brody.
Okay.
Yeah. For sure.
Anyway, we like to dissect these things.
We had fun in those scenes, Adam and I. Like,
for sure.
Those were always like, you know.
Come on.
Just messing around.
She's a piece of ice. She's cold. If you stare at Adam, the focus was really between you and Summer. Are no, you and Taylor? And but then I started looking, watching him, and it's like he's doing so many fun little choices.
Yes.
It's like he's entertaining himself for sure.
Yes.
Not to jump ahead, but I noticed that on the final scene when you all are walking on the beach, it seemed like a lot of that was going on.
Yeah, really, there was really a lot of improv there as well.
Yeah.
Really entertaining.
I'm surprised.
I feel like they kept something in that was inappropriate, but I can't remember what it was. Yeah.
He says at the very end, he goes,
Fluffer.
Fluffer.
Says Fluffer.
And yeah. I am so
And don't I say up the butt or something?
No, Marissa they wouldn't goes, have kept what's that, in? That? And he says, we'll tell you later. But I'm so surprised that got by.
Yeah, I heard that. And I swear to God, I'm pretty sure I say something and I was trying to like catch it, but I didn't go back. I should have.
Get look, subtitles.
I know, subtitles. I definitely couldn't have said like up the butt or something. There's no way they would have kept it. But I feel like I said something in response that was inappropriate. But yeah, I couldn't believe it either. I'm just like, what's that? And I think Misha really was like, what's that?
I think so too. Yeah. Because not many
You're
people.
Right. That was, I don't know.
I don't know. It's.
I didn't tell you the funny thing. Sorry, I have to, I should have mentioned this. When I walked on the set, I think the first scene was with Misha. And her first role ever was in a movie I did with Sam Rockwell in Louisville called Lawn Dogs. And she played, she was like 11 or 12 in that movie. It was a really great movie. Beautiful film. But I walked on set, she was like, she had seen a ghost because I hadn't seen her since. It had been a long, 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 long time.
Wow.
But you were in Lawn Dogs as well. Oh, wow.
Yes.
I didn't catch that one.
Yeah, she shoots me, actually.
Oh, gosh.
She in shoots Lawn a lot Dogs. Of people.
Yes.
Yeah.
She wow, that's me. So cool, though. She must have, yeah, so young. Wow. Must have been a trip to see her.
Yes.
Well, then Taylor does buy it. We decide that, you know, your Summer's declaration that I have, it's either tell Seth's dad the truth or my big mouth and my big buddy list. It's going out there. So we
buddy list, by the way, also very dated because I feel like sidekicks had buddy lists.
They did.
I think so.
I didn't get one, so I don't know.
Just rubbing it in.
They got gifted a lot. See, that's okay. We're supporting. I understand my place. Supporting.
Yeah, so she threatens and Taylor's, she's got.
Well, she does. I mean, it's like, why give it up at the end? And I think, and then of course we cut to the Sandy Dean scene and they say, I love how you guys are throwing around surreptitious nature of the call. What's going on? And he's like, well, I don't know. A relationship between a teacher and a student, surreptitious. Anyway. But he's, okay, so basically what he does and is he explains this device and what it does and it transmits, and we talked about this, it's like a commercial for a sidekick. Mm-hmm. But he basically says, once the dean says, okay, what do you want? And Sandy answers and says, I need you to get Ryan back in. That's blackmail.
Yeah.
Flat out blackmail.
Yeah.
So in this day and age, if Sandy gets found out, that's a big deal.
Oh, yeah.
I guess for the purpose of the show, it's fine. but you would think he could have gotten the same results going to the police too, but I guess he didn't want to do that. So Sandy's compromising. He's got to, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
His moral compass has been flexed.
I also think they drew such a black and white evil character in Dean Hess that they had to do something to really rub his nose in it.
For maybe. Sure.
It was a little more painful somehow. Right. I don't know.
But Sandy is sending him off to do the same thing in another school. Well, that too.
It's not his school, not his kids.
Yeah, right. But no, it's kind of a thing that Julie would do.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But see, we've learned on our podcast, we have to talk about these people like they're real people.
Of course.
That's how it works.
Why not?
That is how it works.
I know. Well, so then that was the end of, so Dean accepts it with our last time we see him, he sits with like a look on his face, shakes his head and it's like, ooh.
Can I see that again?
The reenactments are on point today.
Anyway, in the meantime, the other little thing that's going on is at the beginning, actually, this is kind of a funny scene where so you guys are doing, aren't you guys trying to do makeup together?
Yes, the beginning. And I'm a little oversharing my space with Marissa.
Well, and you have the tiny little mirror, but she gets a phone call from Julie and she's looking fabulous in her little hat. Up
and of your hat, and it looks so glamorous. And
we pull back.
And she's in a really shitty motel.
That swanky motel. Which was actually...
with, by the way, a police officer like arresting someone as they walk by you. Just to paint a picture.
I think we need to pay attention, or at least I do. No matter what happens to Julie, she's always dressed to the nines.
Yeah. She's Julie Cooper.
I think we see her twice later in the season where she's not dressed. She's dressed more appropriately for her surroundings. Mm. But she'll still maintain that facade. So anyway, Kirsten has Julie, she has a lead on some beachfront properties, and this is the first time she meets Charlotte because she shows up and...
another shade ball.
Another what?
Shade ball.
Shade ball?
Yeah.
Creepy?
Yeah.
Charlotte?
Yeah.
Although we all kind of similarly look alike. Somebody thought I was Jerry Ryan once at a party.
I can see that. All very beautiful.
How long
ladies.
Was Jerry on the show?
We're in episode 5, and I think she's her last one is next episode.
Is it?
So like 6 episodes. Yeah, she started. I just remember having so much fun. I don't know if it's because I've seen these episodes, but for some reason I remember shooting all of these scenes with Jerry. Mm. I don't know. We had a lot of fun.
That's good.
But I think it is interesting, you know, when Julie shows up for the condo and she's hawked her ring and she has this bag of cash. And I still have those pants, by the way. I've just found them.
Do you know how many items of clothing that Mindy has from the show? I have 0. I don't know how. Okay, I got the sidekick. You got the wardrobe.
It's so funny. Eric's like, this is what we're doing.
I love
for.
That you remember, though. That's what's remarkable.
Well,
I mean,
it's sitting, they're in my closet. And I'm like, when can I wear these?
And everything's like,
you must
coming
have a
back.
Big closet.
No, I don't. That's the thing. Actually, I'm simplifying my life and getting
Except
smaller.
Except you're
smaller.
Not letting go of Julie Cooper's wardrobe. No.
Because I still fit.
Fair enough.
I didn't a couple years ago, but I didn't.
Fair
it's
enough.
It's so funny. We got when they canceled Ugly Betty, we were allowed to, you know, take a few things, but mm-hmm. they literally put the wardrobe on auction and we had to buy our stuff back.
No way.
Well, was Ugly Betty Warner Brothers at all? Or is it ABC?
ABC.
It's ABC. ABC.
How many seasons did you do of Ugly Betty?
We were in the middle of the writer's strike, so we did like 80 something episodes. So it was like 4.5-ish.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say. Yeah.
I hear nothing but amazing things about America. She's.
Yeah, she's really fantastic.
I hear it. That's what I hear. That's awesome.
We had so much fun. I mean, everyone. It was just probably the closest TV family in real life. You know, we were always over one another's homes. And
you guys
just already spend that much. Sorry.
So you were nominated for quite a few awards too, the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, right? I got the photo up on the wall. We won a Golden Globe.
Yeah.
And Emmy and a SAG. Yeah, no, it was really great.
Yeah,
it's
awesome.
Really amazing.
Wasn't Alan Dale on for a bit?
He was.
Yeah.
He was my dad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's what it was.
I love Alan. Yes. I did a movie with him in New Zealand years before, and it was, again, like, you know, I've been like, yeah, he's. I love Alan.
Yes. We love him too.
He's like,
yes.
He never ages either. That's an amazing thing.
Exactly the same.
We got to catch up with him.
We did.
Last season.
Yeah. First season. Yes.
That's what it was.
Yes.
Are we in the third one already?
Oh, we are. but the really, just to sum up and then how this episode ends, did we already? Oh, when Marissa's crying in the diner, she says her whole thing to Ryan, but then he shows up. Well, actually, Summer and Seth have like figured out how to get Ryan back in school, and then they think he's left. He's set sail.
Oh, it was such a, you know, her sitting there crying. Misha's so good at that.
She is the best.
And I just felt for her. She's sobbing, crying. Marissa, and you guys show up and they're like, what? We just pulled off the most amazing mm-hmm. thing. And in my mind, I'm like, it's only 3 weeks. It's only 3 weeks.
I wish I would have known that. I would have like not had such a strong reaction.
It could be longer, and then it could be repeat for sure. And so I understand the stakes. But then I think it's a, and then if sure enough, Ryan shows up, and I like the line that Seth says, the return of the not so ancient mariner, that Samuel Taylor Coleridge reference to that poem. I mean, it's like these little things that Josh and Stephanie should throw in.
Yeah.
That I was like, I had to look that one up. But, all is well. And he says, I don't know what my future is, but my future is with you.
I know. It's so sweet.
It really is. So and then sweet. We have Bounty Hunter.
Fluffer
in the future. And Fox censors didn't get that one.
No one knew what it meant.
They just added the rolling waves over that tail end.
Right.
A little bit.
Well, I'm going to go back and listen because I feel like I make a comment. I could totally be wrong.
That's why I found, Eric, that I watch everything with subtitles because you get all these little lines of dialogue that you can't hear. And you get dialogue in the background and such. So, but that was the end of Dean Hess, who was one of the most liked villains on the OC.
Such a
but I'm glad to know you had a good time on the show.
I did.
That's
yeah,
that's
it was
lovely.
So much fun. Yeah, I mean, I also knew it was fun, easy to breeze in and do my bit and go too.
Did you have fan reaction on the streets or anything like that, or from that show? Did you?
I did. It's funny. I was about to say automatically, no, I don't think so. But yeah, I remember when I was shooting something in Nova Scotia and I decided to take a drive. The Cabot Trail goes all the way around the island. It's a long, beautiful drive. And decided that it was time to find a motel. And I was in the northern part of the province and no one told me there weren't many places to stay in the off season. Happened to find like a B&B and knocked on the door and a sweet man answered the door and his daughter was standing behind him, teenage daughter, and I didn't think anything of it. And I said, is there any place to eat? And he said, well, this person down the street makes pizzas out of their garage. I think, you know, I can call over and see if they'll do whatever. So I go in and I drop my bags and there's a knock on the door. And in the time that I put my bag, it was only about an hour, I guess, before I went to go get the pizza. Sorry, I'll make this quick. He and his daughter presented a walking stick. I guess they made walking sticks there as a side business. And they had a wood burned into the handle. Dean Hess, the OC.
No.
Yeah. I swear to God.
Do you still have really the stick?
I do. I was like, I've been moving stuff around. It's in the garage somewhere, but I came
That's
across
so
it a few minutes ago.
Cool. Yeah. And of course, only Canadians are like, I'm going to make you an engrave a walking stick for you before you walk down to get that
for
pizza.
Your favorite character.
Yeah. Favorite.
That is so awesome. I want a walking stick with engraved. I'm going to Nova Scotia.
Well, we actually have some fan voicemails for you. Some questions. So if you have a, let's do those.
Hi, Rachel and Melinda. I'm Laura from London. Loving the podcast. Hi, Eric. My question for you is, it was a controversial storyline to have a principal in a relationship with a student. And this was quite a common storyline in 2000s TV teen dramas. What do you think of it? Why do you think it was such a common storyline? And what do you think your reaction would be if you were in a show that tried to do a similar storyline now in 2022? Thanks. Bye.
Wow, that's a minefield, huh? Mm-hmm. Jeez. Well, I think the learning curve has been incredibly steep and a long time coming. Obviously, with the Me Too movement, this everything has to be handled in a different way, and a lot of these things were always going on and they hadn't been addressed. And it's, you know, way past time we had. And I think I feel much more strongly about it now as a father. It was a lot more common. I'm thinking back to even in college where it was considered not, I mean, I went to Sarah Lawrence where it's about as progressive as one could find in terms of a college experience. And it was even frowned upon then, even though it was consenting 18 and over. I can't even wrap my head around it, whether it was the aughts or nowadays, how there was any frame of reference why this could be allowed to go on. I don't know. It's a hard question to answer. I don't know. I mean, it's always timely, no matter when it's addressed. But I think shedding light on it discourages this behavior from happening, certainly. And like we see, I think it's interesting that the sidekick is in this episode because it's the first time we have that kind of instead of hearsay, it's real, you know, potentially, even though he's bluffing, real evidence. And that sort of shifts everything, you know, what things would be like nowadays if we didn't have that immediate response and people being culpable because of video and photographs in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. And even Dean, when Sandy presents him with the facts, he instantly says, oh, well, she's an aggressive girl. It's her fault.
Right.
He shifts the blame. But we find whether that's true or not, there's still that line of responsibility as an adult, right?
I find it interesting that he's been a jerk for so long, Dean Hess. I do find it interesting that he rolls over that easily.
Yeah.
Right.
I do.
I agree.
He would have doubled down probably. I mean, especially in this, not to get political.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
In this day and age.
Right. Know? I'm sure they thought about getting real pictures or the bluffing. The writers probably brought up different scenarios, but
for sure.
This is the way they went.
Yeah.
This is the way they went.
Yeah.
Thank you for your question. We have two more.
Oh. Hello, I'm a huge fan of the OC, and I was wondering for Eric, what is the most fun part about playing a villain, a character as annoying as Dean Hess? I'd love to know.
I guess the first thing that pops in my head is being able to get away with it. I guess, like, if you're going to be an absolute jerk, being able to explore, I mean, as actors, you know, being able to explore that without consequence, I guess, mm-hmm. is part of the playing around that I enjoy, even though watching it leaves me with icky feelings, I guess.
I think
being able to just play, the fact that there is absolutely nothing redeeming about Dean Hess is still kind of stupefying. I don't even know. I mean, given the lines that were written, I don't know what else I could have done with it, but I don't even know if I could pull that off nowadays.
Well, like, if even Taylor was written as she's written as a villain, but then the writers start writing the different layers and the complexities that is a human being. And they did the same thing for Julie. She starts very... She fills the role as a villain, but you don't play a villain as a villain. You just try to play the truth and serve the dialogue and the text. But anyway, that's my thought.
Yeah, the lack of judgment, I think, is what's fun, mm-hmm. I think, as well.
But it's fun. It can be fun. There were times when, specifically on the OC, where I had some dialogue that made me cringe and I'd get the giggles. It was so harsh. I'm like, who would ever say this? And it's like, okay, she would. Right. And she would say it without, because she doesn't care what people think. And to be honest, that's a superpower, not caring what people think about me or what or anyone's opinion of me, no matter what. That's something that I've learned to start to do.
My mom's quote, it's none of my business what other people think.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, so.
Yeah, I mean, I think we try and act that way in life, but where there is that sort of, that person on your shoulder censoring what we do in our lives. But yeah, it was hard to watch, surprisingly.
Do you like to watch yourself and these things? Is it, you know, there are times when I watch this episode or these shows and I'm like, ooh, I like the haircuts, or I'm like, oh, I looked better there, or
I have those jeans.
but it is weird where I'm like, I believe that character. I'm like, that's not me. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's such a character.
The thing is, people, you are indivisible for a whole swath of audience members. You're indivisible from the character you play, which I think is the hard part, you know, to sort of process, especially when you're playing such a jerk. Yes, right?
Like, you're not that guy.
No, you're not, but you played it well.
Autumn Reeser is now one of the Hallmark darlings, but you worked with her way back when on the OC and then Nature of the Beast. How was it to act with her way back when, and have you remained friends?
We do these fan conventions from time to time, and I got to spend, I would bump into her from time to time at events, but in December I did a a convention, and we had a long weekend. It was sort of like a bunch of actors hanging out in the hotel when we weren't doing our thing. And it was really fun. So we just sat around, drank some wine and caught up. So yes, I got to spend some time with Autumn, and it was nice, super sweet. And it's funny though, with that in mind, thinking about where we were 17 years ago and where we've been since then, it really, I think if we didn't have kids, I don't feel, especially guys, because we're so immature, I don't believe that we would think we're any older, but that's the other thing. I watch that and I think I don't even recognize that person, which is funny. But yeah, Autumn is as sweet as can be.
Yes.
Yes,
she's
absolutely.
One of the best.
She is.
Well, Eric, this was such a pleasure. Thank you for spending some time with us and reminiscing. And the fans will be so excited to see this. And thank you for your contribution to the show, because, I mean, we love to hate Dean Hess.
Thank you.
It's very fun screaming at the television.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time.
I want your kitchen.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Okay. Thank you.
No, it's just so, I love it. Yeah, it was so nice having you, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening. Follow, rate, and review. Welcome to the OC Bitches, wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like to watch us, check it out on YouTube.
Bye. Bye, bitches.